Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. Today, I take you to Livingston, Montana, where I interviewed Michael McCormick, the director of the Food Resource Center, a food pantry, commercial kitchen, and community gathering space. Let's find out why, as McCormick claims, the Food Resource Center is the vaccine and not the band-aid for feeding and fueling the Livingston community.
Well, thank you for coming. We're pleased to have you and give you a tour and tell you about our different programs that we provide for Livingston and Park County.
And I cannot wait. Please tell the listeners about the programs you have here.
Well, the food pantry, the Livingston Food Pantry, has a history that goes back about a dozen years. And until 2 years ago, the pantry was located in an old automotive garage on a hard-to-reach eastern edge of town. And it pretty much did one basic thing and did it quite well. Provided food to people in need, and that was pretty much the end of its participation in the community. I got engaged after retiring and moving to Montana to go fishing, and got bored fishing every day. Imagine that.
And the community's benefited from that.
Yeah. And volunteered at the pantry and got involved, and one thing led to another, and I became the director about 8 years ago. And it's been an amazing journey, learning so much about the community and learning so much about poverty and people in need, why people are in need, and how we as a society can best serve and support those people.
That is changing the concept of the old food pantry, food bank idea, correct?
Exactly, yeah. After more than 30 years in for-profit corporate America, I really wasn't all that interested in just trying to raise money, buying a lot of cheap processed food and passing it out and then going home, because it was leaving the issue of poverty and hunger unattended. And we wanted to make a much greater statement and take a position in the marketplace that illustrated how important the role of a food pantry in a local community can be.
And how is it different here?
Well, being an old marketing guy, the first thing I wanted to know was who are we serving and why? Because very quickly became interested in what are the root causes and what do we need to do, what can we do to address those root causes and begin to resolve this issue. I'm not interested in buying band-aids. I want to develop the vaccine and begin to cure this situation in Livingston and Park County.
And what did you find when you did the research?
Well, we found that we were serving over 300 households every month, and our average household size is just over two people. So in a busy month, we were helping feed 600 to 700 people in Livingston. And when you put that into context and see that the population of Livingston is just over 7,000, in an average month, we were helping feed almost 10% of the population. And we were distributing in Livingston a huge amount of food. And what that illustrated to me was that the food pantry was playing a very important role in the local economy and the local food system.
Well, aside from providing food, you have classes and other resources that these people can use to make them more independent in being able to help themselves, correct?
Correct. One of the things we did very quickly after I got involved was begin to do research on and go back to that point I made about understanding who we're serving and why they need to be here. We began to answer those questions, and what we saw was that 80% of the people we serve in an average month are in the food pantry in need because of unemployment or underemployment. And these were people who were telling me they wanted to work, they were looking for work. And so we did some focus group studies, and because again, I wanted to understand why they weren't working, why couldn't they find good work. And it became apparent that the major issue was a lack of marketable job skills.
And here you're teaching people how to cook, and you have career classes that you provide.
Precisely. So going to the Job Service Center here in Livingston, I learned that the data I was looking at was 2012 when the idea for this center was being developed. And that year, the Job Service Center here in Livingston had posted over 700 job openings. 17% of them were for restaurant cooks and related kitchen workers.
So there were a lot of unskilled people here.
I went out and talked to every restaurant owner and chef I could find, and they all told me the same thing, Stella, that they can't find anybody to hire. Nobody has experience, training, and small restaurants don't have the capacity to bring people in and train them from scratch. They just can't afford to do that. So the concept of culinary training became important in what we do here.
So you have a 12-week program that starts in the fall?
We do two sessions, one in the spring, one in the fall. We limit it to 6 to 8 students in each class so that there's a lot of one-on-one work with the chefs that help teach, a lot of experience in the kitchen. They learn all the basic cooking techniques, food safety, handling. When they finish the program, they can go into any kitchen in America and go to work and be productive right now.
Aside from that, you also have a state-of-the-art kitchen, which I am dying to see, that you provide opportunities where new businesses can come in and produce food or experiment or test out.
Precisely. The kitchen, I tell people when we show them the kitchen, don't see a kitchen. See an economic development laboratory, because that's what it's all about. It's about new product creation, startups, entrepreneurial startups, expansion of existing small food processing companies. Again, in an effort to drive economic development, because you can't separate hunger from poverty, in my mind, and you can't feed people out of poverty. You can't separate poverty from economic development. So if we're going to begin to have a significant impact on hunger and poverty, we've got to do it through education, healthcare, and economic development.
Well, it's long and community support, what you're doing here in helping the citizens of this town.
Yeah, this community, Stella, is just remarkable. The center that we're sitting in right now that houses our food pantry, our community meeting room, and our commercial shared-use community kitchen is all paid for. There's not a nickel of debt, and it was all paid for through very generous donations from individuals and foundations. We did get one community development block grant that was a significant portion of our funding, almost a third of the total money we raised. So having not having a big nut each month to have to meet, we're able to do things that, we can allow entrepreneurs to come in, for example, and charge very low rates so that they can afford to come in, test and develop new food products. We have all kinds of programs to help support. We've got people like myself ready to help write business plans. We've got a team of volunteers at a local bank that will help do financial projections. We've got a team of local chefs who come in and help develop recipes. We've got people lined up to help with marketing. We've got a scholarship program for entrepreneurs. We have a micro loan fund for entrepreneurs. So we've tried to remove all the barriers to
new business development. That you really have brought together a community, and I believe that you're probably been mostly responsible for getting this nourishment for the community and for this center.
Well, so it's a team and community effort.
Well, I cannot wait to go see the kitchen.
We will visit the kitchen in the second half of the show, but now we step into the food pantry where Michael McCormick walks me through the small market. Sunshine is streaming into this intimate space with shelves neatly stocked with a variety of canned and packaged selections, while a bank of freezers houses shelves of pre-proportioned soups and chilies and a variety of meats.
Well, the goal here, Stella, in our food pantry is to be the friendliest, warmest, most welcoming little grocery store in Montana. And we do those things, those special things, like preparing our own soups and stuff and baking all of our own bread for distribution in the pantry using all Montana-sourced ingredients. Because people coming into the food pantry don't want to be here. And they're wrestling with enough trauma and disappointment in their lives that we want them, when they leave here, not just to have a box of food, but maybe a little more hope and a smile on their face. And so our little store here is designed to be warm and welcoming and well-stocked with healthful food. We buy most all of the food that you see on the shelves. We get some food donated, but most everything you see is purchased. We purchase food items that are low sodium, all natural, whenever we can find them, and provide a healthy selection of food to all clients who come through here. And while we do that, we're also providing some nutritional education because we have these shopping guidelines developed by MSU dietetic interns for us so that people coming through the food pantry have got some information about what foods to select, why they should eat those kinds of foods, etc. So we're really trying to help people be healthier.
Well, and this store is reminiscent of a place that has a true sense of ownership. There's pride here. The shelves are neatly stacked. It's almost as though you're going into a very special, I would say, gourmet style food store that you would see in the country or even a big city. So there definitely is warmth here. Sun is streaming through the windows, and it is a place that is wonderful to be in.
Oh, someone once referred to us as the Dean and DeLuca of food pantries.
Here in Livingston, Montana.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. So there's a whole freezer case with frozen meat products and sausages, and even it looks like stocks and soups.
Over here is our soups and stews, and chilies, some of our processed produce that we buy from area farmers. We buy as much fresh and mostly organic produce that we bring into our kitchen. We put some out fresh for distribution in the pantry, but a lot of it we take into our kitchen and process, meaning we slice it, dice it, whatever, and then we vacuum pack and freeze in 1 pound bags. So when a client comes into the food pantry and wants carrots, for instance, instead of giving them a can of carrots from who knows where that's full of water and salt and other stuff, we're distributing a 1 pound bag of locally grown, probably organic carrots, period. Nothing else in the bag.
That's been hand processed and homemade.
Yes, that's right.
And here around the corner, it looks like you also have baby food and dog food.
And cat food. Cat food, we provide support for everybody in the family, even the four-legged members, dogs and cats. Baby food, diapers, personal care items, everything from soap to toilet paper. And then over here, you can see on another shelf, some of our bread. We bake all of our own bread for distribution in the pantry, and all of our bread is whole grain. It's all grown in Montana. It's all organic, and it's the best bread in Montana right there. We got tired of distributing that squishy bread, you know, that you can take one of those big loaves and wad up and a ball about the size of a golf ball. Well, our loaf of bread weighs a pound and a half, and it's delicious.
And there looks like there's some dried beans. Are these locally grown beans?
The beans are, and the lentils. We distribute a lot of lentils, and with all of these items, we have recipes available, and we help teach people how to use these foods. Lentils, when we first introduced them in the pantry, people wouldn't take them. They didn't know what they were or how to use them. But once we did some demonstrations, and distributed information and recipes. Now people coming in the pantry ask for lentils.
Good. It's educating your customers and teaching them how to use your product. Yes. I think that's really important.
Yep. You know, one of the things, Stella, that I've realized working here in the pantry is that I grew up in what I would refer to as a Leave It to Beaver household. You know, we had a wonderful dinner on the table every night at 6 o'clock, and what I've learned here at the pantry is that not everybody's had that wonderful advantage. And too often we see family units coming through here that are made up of different family members, maybe a relative or a friend living in the household. But what most of them have in common is a lack of understanding of good food and nutrition. So we try in everything we do to provide education and guidance in ways that will benefit people.
Well, and good food brings good people together.
Indeed, yes.
Welcome back to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. We now enter the kitchen at the Food Resource Center with Michael McCormick. Quickly, we are swaddled with the smell of baking bread. The space is bright and open. It is uncluttered and neat. A large work table anchors the center of the production area to the right. On the left wall, a commercial range and skillet is located next to a stack of convection ovens. A large mixer is also found here. In the adjacent room, steam kettles and a vacuum packaging machine flank the room. This kitchen would be any chef's dream.
The kitchen is divided into two functional areas. Because it is a shared use incubator community kitchen, it has people coming in to rent time to make their food products, develop new food products, etc., as we've discussed. So I wanted to be able to have multiple users in the kitchen at the same time. And the way it's designed, we can do that. So we've got two revenue streams instead of one. And all of that money that is generated through kitchen use rental comes right back into the center and helps support the kitchen, and in fact has helped us support three new jobs in our center here. And again, that's what this is all about. It's about economic development and job creation. So when we go in the kitchen, we'll go to the right side and you'll see the area where we do meal preparation, small batch cooking, and all of our baking. And our bread, I should mention, our bread is so good that the Park County Meals on Wheels program now buys all their bread from us. The Livingston Hospital buys bread from us. And we do baking through for a couple of cafes in town. And through all of that baking activity, we are training people to be bakers. So it all comes back to that bottom line, you know, here, because, you know, people don't wake up in the morning, jump out of bed and say, gee, I'm going to go out and be poor and hungry today.
We now step over to the convection ovens where Sissy Hampton is checking on wheat bread baking in the oven. Let's hear from Sissy.
Well, we give bread away at the pantry. People can, and we have some 1-pounders for smaller families or for older adults, and we have 1.5-pounders for everybody else. And we made some rolls for a AAUW meeting that's going to be here tonight for a dinner.
When do you start this process in the morning?
Usually around 8:30 to 9, but it can vary. And usually we do whole wheat and 12-grain breads, but today we're just doing the whole wheat.
And how many loaves on the average do you bake?
Today's a really light loaf day, so it's about 25, 30, and then we have about 36 rolls, but usually we do 2 batches of this and another batch of the 12 grains, so probably up to 60 loaves sometimes, but we don't do them every day.
Well, there's nothing better than a warm loaf of bread coming out of the oven.
Isn't that the truth? I know. Everybody likes that smell, that's for sure, and the taste.
Next, I talked to Dan Rice, the proprietor of Jumping Off Point, a business that sells provisions for camping, including real food for the great outdoors. Dan shares how the Food Resource Center has been an invaluable asset for him.
Community Food Kitchen here is sort of an incubator project for a business I've just opened downtown. The business is called Jumping Off Point. We're right on Calendar Street. And it's a camping adventure supply store, but unlike other camping stores, we also have a food market. And so some of the things we're focusing on with that food market are campfire-friendly meal sizes. So rather than going to the grocery store the day that you're camping and having to buy a full loaf of bread, a 2-pound package of hamburger, and you know all these other eccentric needs that a person might get at a grocery store, we break things down into campfire-friendly provisions. So our uses here at the kitchen are sort of twofold. So one example is we receive locally grown beef and bison in bulk, and then we bring it over here and we break it down into campfire-friendly portions, repackage it, label it, and then have it ready for sale over in our shop.
So you package everything together so someone can take it for car camping, or can they take it backpacking?
It can fit in your backpack, it can be your car camp, you can throw it in your drift boat cooler, or it's a convenient source for a single meal in your home kitchen as well.
Do they have to order in advance?
Nope. We have the food market stocked and ready with locally grown beef and produce and a variety of other food items. So, yeah, so we're using, like I said, we're using the community kitchen here sort of twofold. So we divide up bulk items like the bison and the beef. We also use the kitchen component of this space to bake items like we do adventure pasties. So if you're not familiar with a pasty, it's sort of like a meat pie with potatoes and veggies all stuffed into one thing. And that's a really convenient and filling source of food while you're out at camp. And we also make our own cookie dough in here that can be baked over a campfire in a Dutch oven.
And so what kind of cookies do you have?
We have chocolate chip cookies. They're kind of a traditional Mennonite recipe.
So not only do you provide the product, we can come to your store and actually buy the equipment to cook the food in.
Correct. Yeah, we have a variety of different types of Dutch ovens and camp griddles and things of that nature as well.
So this is almost gourmet camping here.
That's kind of what it is, yeah. And when you combine the component that we have, a wide selection of imported beers and wines and regional gifts, as well as a lot of other products that are made here in Livingston by local makers.
So tell me some of the menus that you have that you use your bison and your beef for.
Well, so right now we have the food market that's set up for you to come in and kind of create your own meals as you wish. We have a variety of spices and condiments and different side items that can go with it. As the weather continues to warm this season, we are going to offer actual meal kits. So it'll come as a bag that will have servings for two, and we'll have like a breakfast option, a lunch option, and a dinner option. So it'll be a real convenient source to come in and just grab a meal that's ready to throw in your cooler or your backpack, and get out on the trail or out on the road, and all that's going to be done here in this gorgeous kitchen over at the food pantry.
Well, we look forward to what packages you finally put together.
Thank you. Yeah, those should be coming soon. And one thing I would also like to say is that from a technical perspective, I really love using this kitchen. I mean, if you were in here and you could see it, it is just a gorgeous kitchen with everything a person could need. But another thing that I really appreciate about using this kitchen is that it's a community-driven project, that I can know that the proceeds we are using to rent the space of this kitchen is going back into the community. And I think that's a really great thing that Livingston has here.
I think it's a great community effort.
Definitely.
Well, thank you very much, Dan.
Thank you, Stella.
We now move from talking to Dan Rice of Jumping Off Point to hearing from another entrepreneur.
I am here with Suzanne Cleric of Dolina Pasta, and she's getting ready to show me the incredible pasta machine she uses to create her product. Tell me about what you make with this machine.
Well, I make fresh pasta, which means I make linguine and pappardelle that isn't dried. It's made with flour and eggs just before I sell it. And the flour and eggs are both Montana grown and organic and local. So they're really great ingredients. And I use the machine to make the linguine, which is the thinner cut noodle, mm-hmm. and pappardelle, which is the thicker one. And this kitchen has also been really supportive as I'm trying to put together ravioli and bring those to the market soon, too.
Well, aside from this pasta machine, I would imagine there's a huge mixer out there that helps you actually mix the pasta.
This machine is actually really great because this big bucket right here is where I mix the flour and eggs together. And so I can just put them in here, and it'll mix it in about 10 or 15 minutes, depending on what kind of dough I'm making. And once it's done mixing, between this area here, there are metal rollers, and the dough will roll out through the rollers onto a spool in a long sheet of pasta.
Well, and I think Michael McCormick aptly described this as the Mars rover, and it does look like that, and it just looks like it would make incredible pasta and make it super easy for you to achieve the process.
It is really great because it really helps me make a lot of pasta quickly, where I would otherwise spend days rolling it out by hand, and this way I can make a bunch for the market.
Well, how often do you come in to make your pasta?
So right now I come in the day before the market. The market's every other Saturday at the Emerson Center in Bozeman. So I come in Fridays, make it all morning and afternoon, and then sell it the next morning. And in the summer, once the summer markets ramp up, I'll be here a lot more doing it before each market.
Will we be able to get this in Billings, Montana?
I hope so. I'm working on a wholesale license right now, so I'm hoping to get it out into shops in the next few months.
What was your background?
My family is from Europe. They're from Croatia. So I grew up in New York making pasta when I was a kid with my grandmothers. The part of Europe where we're from has a lot of different influences. You know, my family, some of them grew up speaking Italian. There's a lot of dramatic influences. So kind of learned to make pasta from a pretty young age with them. And then once we moved out here to Montana, I started making it on my own more because I realized it was so hard to find pasta that was freshly made. So I kind of was talking to other people and realized other people were interested in it. And it was something that could be of use to lots of people.
Yeah, that's great. Tell me how the Food Resource Center has helped you.
Oh, this place is fantastic. Even from the very beginning, just talking with Michael, he was willing to give me tips on how to set it up. We've been working on packaging so I can sell it wholesale. They're just great. I can come in here almost any time I need to work on my pasta. And they've been incredibly supportive as I've been working on R&D especially. So as I'm testing new recipes and all of that, you know, it's easy to come in here. It's easy to work on it.
And when did your journey here begin?
I started here in October. I've been here about 4 or 5 months and kind of tell everyone I know who's starting a food business, this is the place to do it.
Well, I wish you the best of luck.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for talking to me.
Thank you.
Stella, one of the things that we really emphasize here is collaborative efforts between business startups. So one of the things I hope comes out of this is, for instance, Dan, with his jumping off point, becomes a customer for Suzanne's pasta. And one of the things we do for our entrepreneurs is get out and help them open up markets. You know, I've met with several restaurateurs in Bozeman talking about Suzanne's pasta, and they're all eagerly waiting for it to be on the market and ready to buy.
But Michael, what you've done here is that you have provided great equipment. You're putting together the team, but you also have made the effort to provide the best possibilities that they can have. And having the right things to work with really helps in that process.
Well, that's our goal, yeah. Failure in our kitchen is not an option.
I like that attitude.
Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region, has been produced with the assistance of Ken Siebert. Theme music is by Parker Brown. For more information about this show, go to ypradio.org. I'm Stella Fong.